at Camp Kewaunee on August the 12th, 2005, at our 85th reunion. And happy to have Robert Zekiel, who goes by Zeke, who was a camper here and a counselor, and is going to share a little bit with us this afternoon about his reminiscences at Camp Kewaunee. Zeke, when did you begin to hear about camp and come up to camp?
My first year at Kewaunee was 1965. I can still remember when I was told about it in the kind of the eating nook of our kitchen, and my parents and sisters were there, and they brought out a little thing that they'd made that had, it was kind of paper dolls of myself and my cousins, because myself and three of my cousins all came up the first year. I hadn't really heard of it before. Didn't know what Camp Kewaunee was, but my family had been coming up to Lake Webb for 3 years at that point for vacation and staying in a cottage on the lake. My grandfather, Harold Fawcett, who was a professor of math education at Ohio State for 30 plus years, sent me because he had been a counselor here at camp in the 30s, around 36, 37, 38, somewhere in there for, I think, 2 years. He was a personal friend of GR's, and he sent myself and my three cousins.
What year was this again?
65.
65.
I was 14 years old and was in Bear Lodge that first year. That was still back at a time when I was picked up by train. Kewaunee had a train car that started in New Jersey.
Right.
And I picked it up someplace in Connecticut. My parents drove me over with my footlocker and other stuff, and got on the train probably to Boston, and then took a bus from there up to camp. And so that was my very first year. I had Al Duncan and Al Brenholtz were my counselors. Al Duncan taught tennis. And Al Brenholtz worked on the waterfront in swimming and taught, it was called JLS at that time, Junior Life Saving and Senior Life Saving, as opposed to BLS and ALS. I guess they've changed the terminology since.
Yeah, they have.
Apparently.
Yeah, basic life saving or something.
Mike Meserol was my team captain that year. Nelson Lancione was the other captain. And that was the closest that the Gray Maroon score had ever been. It was only a 15-point difference.
15 points.
Yes. One first level.
One first level
was the difference in the end. And I remember the last meeting, before the last campfire, Mike Meserol said, you know, traditionally, the winning captain gets thrown in the lake, and if it's not me, I'll probably cry a lake of my own, he said. It was pretty important. He was an excellent captain, although one of the other things I remember, he came up, back then they had swimming meets every Saturday instead of doing different kinds of things. Swimming was really pushed back then, and they had quite a few kids, I think, that were on like the Columbus School for Boys swim team, and so swimming was real big. They had swimming meets all the time. So Mez came up during rest hour on that Saturday, or maybe it was Friday, the day before, and he was signing kids up for all the different events, and I have never been a very strong swimmer, and I wasn't planning to volunteer to swim in any events, but he came up, and he said, I need people in these events in the senior division.
Yep.
You know, blah, 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 and he put me down for one, and I think I came in third because one person was disqualified. So, anyway, I was not very happy, and I don't think he was very happy with me, but that got me out of some of the other swim meets, so that worked out all right. I had a very good first summer, although I don't remember at the end of that time being just dead set on coming back, but mm-hmm. I didn't say I wasn't going to come back either, but as the winter wore on, I decided I did want to come back, and came back the next year, was in Crow's Nest in 66, got to camp late that year because I was on a canoe trip with my Boy Scout troop, and Dave Hoke and Rich Davis were my counselors. Rich mm-hmm. Davis is at the reunion this year. B.A. Altmaier was in that cabin as well.
Uh-huh.
And I knew B.A. from the previous year. He'd been in Wildcat Lodge, but mm-hmm. when we were together that year, we just kind of hooked up in that lodge, and we've been mm-hmm. best friends ever since, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that was the master camper year, of course, in Crow's Nest. And I really liked Mike Mesrolle, and I worked part-time in baseball. It was kind okay. of where I was heading as a master camper.
Mm-hmm.
But the following season, when I came back as a junior counselor, I really wanted to get the Robin Hood Award, and they had lots of people already working in baseball. So I worked in archery, and okay. And that's where I worked the remainder of my time at camp.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up spending a total of 14 seasons here,
yeah.
two as a camper and 12 as a counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And
straight through?
No, it was not straight through. I was here 65, 6, 7, and 8, and BA was not able to come back in 68. And so I was here on my own that year, and then the next year, after I graduated high school, I went on a travel trip to Spain with a high school group, and BA was back in 69. I came up at the end of the season. My family was living in New Hampshire at that point, and so I drove up for a day, and that made me realize how badly I missed being yeah. in camp that season.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I came back in 1970 through 1975 mm-hmm. and missed 76 because I needed to stay in Ohio to get residency there so I could go back to school at Ohio State, mm-hmm. which I needed to do as an in-state resident. Then I came back in 77 and 78,
mm-hmm.
1980 and 1982.
Great.
We were out in Wyoming by that point.
Mm-hmm.
My wife, Candy, whom I met at school at Ohio Wesleyan, I had told her about camp, and she came up and visited mm-hmm. for a week during the summer of 72.
Oh.
And in 73, she worked at the Kewaunee Inn.
Oh.
We were married in May of 74, and we were the camp parents in 74 and 75.
Mm-hmm.
77 and 78.
Yeah, and I remember that because our son John was up at that time,
uh-huh.
and I knew you were in Ma Frank's cabin.
Yeah, and then I think in 80 and 82, we were under the dining hall at
mm-hmm.
that point. So she spent six summers working here at camp.
Great. Mm-hmm.
And so that pretty much covers my years at,
good.
At
yeah,
camp.
I know. You were very active in a number of things over the years, and of course it's so good to see so many of your buddies back
yes.
this year to
yes.
visit with and to share old stories. Would you kind of share with us some of your impressions, say, of George Frank? He was, of course, here until 77.
Yes.
And so I was wondering what impressions you had of him.
Well, as a kid, like many other kids, I was a little bit in awe of the Franks because they were older and not exceptionally talkative, a little bit gruff, I tended to know GR better than RC. RC was here for a couple of years, and he passed on earlier than GR.
About 66, I think it was.
Yeah, so he was here for a couple of years when I was here, but I knew GR a little bit better, and when I became a counselor and, you know, I dealt with him in terms of negotiating salary and those kinds of things and coming back. He was a wonderful man, and Camp was his vision. He had been an educator and had a real passion for helping others, and in particular boys, which is why he founded the camp along with RC. I always got along very well with him and enjoyed him, although I can't say that I ever really sat down and just visited with him like I'm doing with you right now.
Well, he was getting older. I know our son John has a different impression of him, naturally, than what I had back in the 50s.
Uh-huh.
And when I talk with people who knew him back in the 20s, why, they have a different impression. Because,
yes,
as he even says on his own tape, that he used to play baseball and, you
sure,
know, intermixed just like one of the kids or one of the youngest of our senior counselors would do today.
Sure.
And so it's true that as the years go by, the individuals change. And of course, GR also talked about how he and RC really kind of balanced each other.
Yes.
And I'm sure it was quite a strain for him and for Walter too when they had to start to work together in 69.
Yes.
So all those things kind of feed into it. How about any other counselors that you had, or any impressions of the ones you've even already mentioned? Were there certain men that impressed you more, or gave you more guidance, or gave you a feeling of accomplishment than say some of the other counselors that you came in contact with?
Well, I was quite close with Mike Meserol, even though I ended up not working in baseball. We hung out quite a bit together and talked a lot, and of course playing softball on teams together, and particularly with the counselor series was a lot of fun, and I hung out with him a lot, and he had a wonderful history and feeling for camp himself. He had been here quite a few years and was captain 1 year and was counselor for a number of years beyond that, and so he had a deep respect for camp and particularly for its traditions. One of the things that he felt was very important was the wigwam. I know it disturbed him a little bit when the wigwam stopped being published weekly. As the baseball counselor, he used to try to write up every single game that was played, because he felt that it was real important for kids to see their name in print. And so the wigwam was very important to him, and he worked long and hard on that. He also, although I know that some of the older men in camp, some of the older, what we call senior staff now that don't have lodges, weren't always in favor of this, but Mez always gave out a few kind of funny awards at the end of the year for things that had happened during the camp season. And I looked forward to those at the banquet probably as much or more as anything else, aside from the score when I was a camper. But once I was a counselor, that didn't mean as much to me.
Right.
But he had an eye for humorous situations, and so he would give some kind of funny awards. He gave one to Bruce Birch one time called the Gilded Gotcha, when one of the campers had an older sister who was quite attractive and came up to visit, and it was pretty obvious to anybody who was around that Bruce was kind of hitting on her, and so Mez made up, got an old catcher's mitt and spray painted it gold, and gave that to Bruce, and got quite a laugh out of that. Brian Birch and I were just talking about that earlier today, remembering that. And there were a couple of brothers, Peter and Don Mikrantz, who, as campers, were quite good baseball players. One pitched and one catched, and he gave them the, I think he called it the Assault and Battery Award or something, because they kind of doubled up. And anyway, so I spent quite a bit of time with Mez, and of course, once BA and I kind of hooked up, and we spent a lot of time together. I went to college at Ohio Wesleyan, which is just north of Columbus, and BA lived in Columbus, and he was a year behind me in school, and so he was there when I was a freshman, and then he went to Columbus Technical Institute for a couple of years. And so during those years when I was at Ohio Wesleyan, I used to either bum a ride or hitchhike or something. I'd go down to Columbus for weekends and visit with BA and spend the weekend with BA. And we'd talk about camp, and of course at that point the Estabrooks owned the camp. Starting in 1970, I think, they actually took over the running of the camp. And GR was still here as a director emeritus and so on. And, so we sometimes would go over to Mr. Estabrooks and talk to him about camp and about how things were coming for the coming season and so on. And Chuck Hoffine lived in Bexley, and we'd sometimes visit Chuck, and really like Chuck and Judy, and continued to maintain friendship with them over the years. Those are probably the ones that I spent the most time with, I would guess.
Good. Yeah, well, that's helpful because, of course, my contacts, especially in Bexley, you know, with Chuck. In fact, I got Chuck to come up here, and he always kids me about being, so I've got to give you credit for meeting my wife, because if I hadn't come up here, why, I would never have met Judy. So,
sure.
Anyway, and of course, Hal Myers has given us some kind of a treatment of his years here back in the 30s and and so forth. And Bill, too, actually, Bill Myers. Well, what about getting along with your own archery? Of course, was part of your responsibilities, and you were in a number of lodges then as the senior counselor.
Yes, as a junior counselor, I was in Wildcat and Deer, and then as a senior counselor, I think. I was in Birch Lodge 1 year, Beaver Lodge. I was in Lynx Lodge a couple of years, Wildcat 1 year. And even when Candy and I were in the Camp Mother's cabin, I think I helped with a couple of cabins, Hawk Lodge and Deer Lodge, on different years when they were a little bit short of cabin counselors. I would spend three nights a week in with the kids and help take them on trips and those kind of things, even though I didn't live in the lodge itself. Sometimes spent rest hour in there with the boys and that kind of thing. So a variety of cabins and ages. Billy Proctor was my junior counselor a couple of different years. Nikki Gill, and of course they came back to camp a number of times. We spent quite a bit of time together enjoyed their company, and still see Billy when I come up to visit BA, because he lives in Wilton here.
BA is a lot of fun. I really enjoy visiting with him too, and we saw him during our 2 weeks up here a few weeks ago when we were up here and had a chance to talk with him. What about some of the things that kind of liven up camp, that give a little flavor to your own outlet as a younger person, maybe as well as entertaining the kids on some of the funnier activities that senior counselors seem to end up in sometimes, especially the younger ones?
Yeah, we've had quite a bit of fun over the years doing a number of different things. I can remember one time one of the things that has happened, or did happen back when I was a counselor, is we used to move people's cars if they left them unlocked. We did that a number of times. We had a small group that pushed Rev McCleave's black Volkswagen Beetle all the way up to Council Point, and he spent the better part of the next day looking for it, and it backfired on us a little bit, because even though we were able to push it all the way to Council Point safely, he had a harder time driving it back and actually scraped a tree on the way back, put a little bit of a dent in the door, and was pretty unhappy about that. So I don't know that any of us owned up to it at the time, but and Nicky Gill had an old Opel station wagon that he could take the key out of when it was in the ignition and turn it off, and you could turn it back on without the key then, and he just didn't like to have to remember to have his keys with him at all the time. So we used to turn the ignition part way to unlock the steering wheel, and then we could move it, and he never locked his car, so we decided to move it one night when we were on a night out, kind of having some fun, and so we pushed it into the middle of camp and got a couple of 2x12s and pushed it right up onto the porch of the rec hall. We were going to put it in the rec hall, and it just wouldn't quite fit between the doors there. It was about 4 inches too wide, so we had to push it back down, and so we then push it out to the rifle range, and on one side of the range you could take the fence down pretty easily, and you could take the fence with the target holders down, and so we put his car out behind the target rack there on the rifle range, and he came by the next morning and was looking for his car, and he didn't know for sure who moved it, but he came up to me, and he had kind of a wry smile on his face, and I think he suspected I had a hand in it, and
yeah.
Asked if I'd seen his car, and I told him I had, and it was a real nice little car. And he said, no, I mean, have you seen it today? And I said, well, isn't it out in the parking lot? And I was not going to tell him where it was, but just about that time, Bruce Birch came striding up to, we were in front of the office, and Bruce Birch came striding up and said, whose car is that out on the rifle range? And Nick knew right then that it was his, and he'd been had, so he got his car and went on his day off a little bit late. But so those were kind of some fun times that we had. I can remember this is a little bit different, wasn't really a prank or anything, but my first year when I was in Bear Lodge, there was a camper in Crow's Nest named Tom Borgie. And Tom Borgie was quite a good water skier. And I was out on the ski dock at free time for free ski one time, and he did a standing dock start onto slalom ski and skied around the lake. Well, when he came back in, he decided he didn't want to get completely wet, and he tried to do a standing dock exit from skiing. He tried to jump up onto the dock on the ski, and he made it a little bit out of the water, but he did not make it onto the dock. And so when Hoke turned the boat around and came back, he beached Tom for several days or something for pulling that stunt.
Yeah. Yeah, that could have been serious too.
Yes, it could have.
Yeah.
Very much so. I also remember last night of the season when I was in Crow's Nest as a camper the following year. The Crow's Nest, of course, being the only lodge that's upstairs above the sailing department, and it has and I wonder if that building was there before camp started even, because it looks like an old barn. It has doors at the top that, like barns where you used to be able to swing up with a pulley system to put hay in the loft or something. But anyway, it's got those kind of doors there. And,
right.
And Rich Davis, as I said, was our counselor, one of our counselors, and he had pulled his car right up in front of Crow's Nest in order to packet, and he needed to leave the next day right away. A lot of times counselors don't leave till later that evening or the following day after the kids leave, but he pulled it right up in front of Crow's Nest so he could leave the next day quickly. And that night, one of the campers in Crow's Nest decided that he did not want to travel all the way up to the fort in the middle of the night, so he opened those doors and he took a short port out the front right onto Rich Davis's car.
Right. Oh,
Rich Davis had, we were a lodge that was quite a handful for the counselors, I'm afraid.
Who were your counselors that year?
Rich Davis and Dave Hope, who was in water skiing.
That's right, you did say that.
And B.A., I don't remember this myself, but B.A. remembers Rich, when we wouldn't quiet down at night, he'd make us go out and run, but the problem was we were faster than he was, so we'd run away from him, and then he couldn't keep up with us, and so we gave him a hard time one way or the other, I guess. And so anyway, a lot of fun, and most of it pretty harmless.
Oh yeah. What about tripping? Did you are there any particular trips that either you went on as a camper or that you took your lodge on, or any other activities like that that stand out as kind of outstanding events in your camp experience?
I have always loved Mount Tumbledown, mm-hmm. and had climbed it before I ever even came to camp when my family vacationed up here. And of course, I loved going up it. And usually, when I was a counselor, I took my cabin up Tumbledown on a campout. I took them overnight up on the top of Tumbledown, so that was one that really stands out, and was a lot of fun. As a camper, I went on the Chain of Ponds canoe trip. That was quite fun, although I remember the weather wasn't especially good for that particular one. But even more fun was the Kennebec and Androscoggin trips, because the water was moving a little bit more than Chain of Ponds. Yeah, and hit the rapids in those rivers was quite a bit of fun.
Yeah.
When we went down the Kennebec, I wonder if I was in Crow's Nest at that point, or perhaps was even a junior counselor helping out with that trip. That's a river that they used to run the logs down,
and
they had big logs that were chained together so that they could stop the logs at some points over to the side of the bank, and there were points in the river where it was relatively calm, and we would actually get out of our canoes and run along the logs that were chained together, and I remember enjoying that. Probably not the safest thing to do, but I enjoyed that trip quite a bit. And during most of my years here, I never went on the Katahdin trip, but in, I think, 1980, when I came back as a senior staff member, I asked if I could go along just to kind of help out and chaperone, and I was able to do that. And of course, that is a spectacular trip
of
Mount Katahdin, and I think boys that get a chance to do that have it, in some ways, it's kind of a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
That's knife edge.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, that's the terminus of the Appalachian Trail, and the highest point in Maine, and with that knife edge and everything else, it's
I did that about the age of 16.
Did you?
Yeah. In our Crow's Nest, did you?
Yes. I never went on the Monhegan trip. Didn't really have the money to go on the extra trips when I was a camper, and was happy just to be in camp and do the activities.
Right.
But after the 1973 season, some of us who were staying up here after camp, Tom Taylor, B.A., my wife Candy, we went out to Monhegan ourselves for 3 or 4 days.
Oh, really?
We did not get to go deep sea fishing, but we spent 3 or 4 days at the Monhegan house that, was it Courtney Day, I think, was the name of the camper who came here, and his parents ran the Monhegan house.
No, that name is familiar. I'm not...
Yeah, I think he was only here a couple of seasons, but we stayed out there, which is a beautiful old inn, and at the time there was no electricity in it. They had these hurricane lamps that had a little tube running to them with a stopcock on it, and he turned it on and held a match up to it. It had gas in it, gas lamps. And anyway, we spent 3 days out there, and that was wonderful.
What about theater night? Any sort of activities or skits or plays or anything that you remember that were particularly entertaining to you or significant, either the ones you were in or just ones that you saw?
Sure. I didn't do a lot of that myself. There was one skit night that I was involved in where I dressed up as the Hermit of Monhegan Island. Mm-hmm. And Timmy Williams, I remember in particular, had dressed up as Joe Stockhausen, our camp nurse.
Uh-huh.
And then there were other people as well. Kevin Morin pretended to be Mr. Estabrook. And Mike Mesereau dressed up as Chief Kiwani and kind of played the part of Johnny Carson on The Tonight Show and brought us out one at a time and interviewed us, and we talked about different experiences as they related to camp. And that was kind of fun. The show that I remember probably the most was Ed Chase doing the show that its official title is A Night at an Inn, but everybody else just called Toffee, because that was the name of the main character. And he did a one-man show.
Oh.
And it was kind of a suspenseful show. And he would get up on stage, and there'd be no props, but he would say, you know, there's a door over here, and there's a window over here, and imagine a table and a chair right here. And he played all the different characters. There were only two or three characters in it.
Neat.
And it was wonderful. Mm-hmm. And so I really enjoyed that. The first few years I came, I don't really remember skit nights, but they brought them back after a while, and I remember enjoying them, but I can't remember too much specifically about them.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the one other memory I have was a counselor skit, and it may have been that same, It was not the same one where Mez was Chief Kiwani, because I was standing at the back and I wanted to take pictures of it. But Mark Stanton dressed up as Bruce Birch.
Oh.
And Bruce Birch always fancied himself as Steve McQueen. And he did look a little bit like Steve McQueen. And he was a night man and ran the range, and he had an extra big flashlight is Nightman, and so we took a flashlight and put a round shipping tube on it and wrapped it in aluminum foil, so it was about 6 feet long, and kind of exaggerated everything, and somebody had like a Vespa motor scooter or something up here that year, so we took that into the counselor room, which is right below us now, and when it was time for Mark Stanton to come up, he rode that up to the stage from the counselor's room up the aisle, and had his big flashlight and aviator sunglasses on and everything, and it was all in good fun. Bruce enjoyed it himself, the caricature and everything, but it made everybody laugh quite a bit at that.
That would be fine. Well, some of these things, of course, if you're reviewing today, you showed your slides last night, and so that, of course, I can even picture it better that way, because those were the years when I was not as active as I had been earlier. So, well, this is great. I'm just thinking of anything else, any impressions of Walter or Jane or of the cooks, any other activities that you'd like to mention about any of those individuals? Or
I think Walter did an excellent job, an absolutely excellent job in taking over the camp. Mm-hmm. I know I was talking to somebody up at lunch today about the fact that there are a lot of camps that have folded over the years. Yeah. They just can't keep going for one reason or another, and I think one of the things that's extremely difficult is maintaining the tradition of a camp and keeping kids interested in coming back and maintaining the ties. And Kiwani has always had a phenomenal return rate for both campers and especially counselors. I know we've had at least fourth generation campers here over the years, and I think Walter and Jane did an excellent job carrying on after they took over for GR. And of course, 5 years ago when they finalized putting the camp into a nonprofit corporation, I just think that is one of the most magnanimous
magnanimous effort that I've ever seen.
Because he did have, I think, a fair amount of money sunk into it, and but it ensured that Kiwani would go on and on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
he is getting payment to some degree for it, but that's right. He and Jane both have given a good part of their life, and of course, living in Bexley, as I did, he'd drop around even every year with the catalog and say, oh, if you have any other boys that may want to come, you want to see it yourself, and so forth.
The food has always been excellent here. We've had a variety of chefs. I remember Leonard Taylor in particular was the chef when I came here. He was an elderly black gentleman who cooked at a, I was told, at a private school in New Jersey and had been here for a number of years. And one of the things about Mr. Taylor was that he had essentially 7 days worth of meals. I don't know if this is true when you were in camp, but if we were having beans and Franks, you knew it was Friday night. If we were having this other meal, you knew it was Tuesday lunch or whatever. We had three meals the same, essentially, each
day.
You know, every Monday. You had the meal you had the Monday before and and stuff. But the food was very good. I don't mean to make out like it wasn't good. But and I also remember that he liked the wood stove that was in the kitchen better than the gas stove.
I see.
Because he felt like he could, it heated more evenly or something. There was something about it that he really liked that wood stove and used that. I started coming to camp when we still had crank phones. And so if you wanted to call out, you had to pick up the receiver and ring the crank, and you got the operator, and you told them what number you wanted. And if somebody wanted to call in, they got the operator, and they would have to tell the operator, weld 10, ring 2. That was Camp Kiwani. The inn was weld 4, ring 3. And I still remember that they got their milk from a dairy in milk cans. Somebody had to take a wooden mallet and knock those lids off. And then they would tip it over and pour that milk into a pitcher. And they... on days when we had ice cream, they had hard-packed ice cream in 5-gallon buckets. And Ben Bennett, who worked in the shop, did you know Ben?
Yes. Had his son, actually, in camp.
He would go out and help with the ice cream because it was so hard and hard to scoop. And I think Herb may have helped with that my first years at camp. They had several of the senior staff members would go out and help scoop the ice cream. That was extremely good. Bill Yardley, of course, I loved Bill Yardley. He was not there in the beginning when I started coming up, but started coming back in the 70s again, when Chris started coming to camp, I think. And he revived the log, which we hadn't had in the interim, and really enjoyed that. And had the pleasure of being in charge of the log a couple of summers myself. And then Mike Altmeyer has done a tremendous job with that since then, a lot of years. I did not mention Mike Altmeyer earlier, partly because when he graduated from college, he got drafted and was gone for probably 4 years anyway. But and I did not know him as well because he was older when I first started coming to camp. But when he came back to camp, we did quite a bit together and have maintained a friendship over the years. And after the last reunion, he had just retired from teaching and wanted to take a trip across the United States visiting historic sites, battlefields, and presidents' homes, and so on. And he got out to Wyoming right about the time the snow started to fly towards the end of October, and he spent most of the winter with us out there.
Oh, neat.
We had a wonderful time sharing camp memories and talking about both education and camp during the time he spent with Candy and myself out there. So, anyway.
Now, were you ever a director of activities? Did you ever get into that? Or
I helped with that one summer when Fritz Monroe had to go home early.
Right, maybe that's what I vaguely remember.
Yeah. I was never in charge of it for a whole summer. John Moore did that for a number of years, and Fritz did it for a number of years. Big John did it for a number of years while I was up here. And one year, we hadn't planned on coming back, but I hadn't found another summer job by mid-May or something out in Wyoming, and said to Candy, well, why don't we go back to camp again? And and she said, okay. And so I called up Walter, and most of the staff was set at that point, but Fritz had to leave early that year, so he said, well, I need somebody to do this, and I can put you here and use you in these places. So I was glad that he could take us, and we came back that summer, so I did help as director of activities a little bit that year.
Great. Well, I know over the years that talking with various counselors, often your name came up, and I knew you were in a lot of different things, and had certainly made an impression on a lot of your colleagues, as well as maybe some of the young people, you know, boys that were in your lodge. Well, I guess that's about it. Unless there's anything else, I do appreciate your getting together. This is Ed Hamblin talking here with Bob Zekiel. And we're very pleased here on this 12th day of August to have a chance to get together.
Thanks, Ed. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.